From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on March 30th during a live interview on MSNBC. Anchor Chris Matthews was talking to presidential candidate Donald Trump, and the subject turned to abortion. Matthews discussed his own Catholic faith and the challenges of reconciling a personal belief against one's faith. Trump has declared himself to be absolutely a Christian, pro-life, and his position on abortion has moved from supporting abortion rights years ago to opposing them during this campaign. But in that interview, Trump stumbled a bit. Matthews asked Trump if there should be criminal penalties for women who have abortions, assuming either Roe v. Wade is overturned or legislatively things change, as Trump says he wants. And after a bit of discussion, Trump said, yes, there should be some criminal penalties for women who have abortions. And that caught many by surprise, because many Americans who oppose abortion have not supported laws to criminalize it, at least not for mothers or mothers-to-be. And once Trump got that memo, he changed his mind the next day. But Trump's comments inspired a number of essays and op-eds. Why not enforce criminal penalties if abortion is made illegal? If you believe abortion is murder, how can you oppose criminal penalties for women who choose to have them? This hour, a discussion with guests who will explain why they oppose both abortion and criminal penalties for women who have abortions. Let me welcome my guest in studio. Father Jim Hughes is here. And Father Jim retired as a diocesan priest of January of 2015. First of all, welcome, Father, and tell us a little bit about Project Rachel and some of your own background and work in these areas.
Well, in 1996, we started Project Rachel. It's for women and men. It's mainly women, but they're men, to help them after the process who've had abortions. There's great woundedness, great brokenness, and it's an amazing, it's the most powerful thing in my life that I've ever experienced, to watch a woman begin and then towards the end of it to see the healing and the peace that they find. The other part of this, too, is that I have been a chaplain both in a prison and a jail, and have worked for what's called restorative justice, for alternatives to incarceration. And I think both of those will come to play here in our discussion today.
And on the phone with us is Rachel Lee Peller, who is representing an organization you might have heard of, Feminists for Nonviolent Choices. And Rachel has consulted for social justice nonprofits, including an anti-trafficking coalition, a refugee association, an anti-war network, and a film festival that brings to light the experiences of immigrants. She earned her bachelor's degree in women's studies, and she volunteered as a sexual assault at a sexual assault care center. Rachel, thanks for taking the time for the program.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Let's start with some of the comments that have made headlines in recent weeks, and we'll start with that conversation between Chris Matthews and Donald Trump, and it goes back to March 30th, and I think we should have, do we have that one as well, Rob? We should have two comments there. We only have one. Do we have the other? Okay, well, before we get there, let me ask Rachel. I'll start with you, Rachel, for the question regarding criminal penalties. How common, you know, how often does that come up? And in general, how do you respond to people who are wondering if there should be criminal penalties if abortion is not legal?
Well, Trump's position is actually very rare within the pro-life community. And what I saw from people that I work with, people that I'm affiliated with within that movement, is that people within the pro-life community were just as outraged by his comment as people who are not within that community. And this is just from, you know, personal experience, but also Anna Quinlan, who's a very vocal pro-choice advocate, she wrote about what she considers this to be pro-life hypocrisy. So she talked about a documentary in which a man was asking pro-lifers how much jail time they think a woman should get if she had an abortion. And these were people who were standing outside abortion clinics. So people who are very heavily involved and very adamant about overturning Roe v. Wade or finding solutions. And none of them, according to him and according to Anna, none of them had clear, concise answers. It's not something that people had considered. And I think that a lot of that is because it's never something that has existed. So even before Roe v. Wade, none of those state laws that banned abortion had made it a criminal offense for women. So the entire idea of making it a criminal offense is something new that hasn't been a part of this discourse.
I don't think the question is an unfair one. Do you, Rachel?
No, I think it's a very valid question to be asking, because we're talking about abortion as a form of violence. And so what does that mean? Does that mean, if you're looking at it that simplistically, of course everybody who performs some sort of violence that should be addressed, right? We need to live in a world where there's justice. But I think that the question is bigger than that, and any kind of reasonable law needs to take into account the reality as it is and not just moral distinctions made in the abstract. And so that's where the difference lies.
Okay. Father Jim, what do you think?
Well, I think it's an important question. Again, like any question, how you frame it, you've probably heard the famous question, have you stopped cheating on your taxes? Well, if you answer yes, it means you were cheating. If you answer no, it means you
are still
cheating.
Yes.
So how you frame the question. So even asking about punishment, what would be the purpose of punishment? What would be the reason for doing it? I think it's an area that, in my opinion, I've been involved in this area since 1968, and I don't think it's one we've ever adequately addressed. Part of it is that it's been legal for 43 years, but it's embedded in the culture. I mean, if you look at how many millions of people have had it, and then that affects fathers and grandparents and parents, it's embedded in the society. So even if it became abortion became illegal, there would be a whole transition period of how you would work this through. But I think it is an important question. And to me, it's a balance between if you say there's no penalty, nothing involved, then it minimizes that life. It means there's no life there or it doesn't have any value. On the other hand, if you move towards punishing the woman that had the abortion, what purpose would that serve? So what helped me in preparation for this is I went back and read, there's a book called Mothers Who Kill Their Children by Cheryl Meyer and Michelle Oberman. This is about afterbirth, not before birth, but it's called neonaticide. And I see a lot of parallels in what they were doing in terms of looking at this issue of especially newborns, but later on when parents, mainly mothers, kill their children. And I think there's a lot of parallels in what she was saying, how they felt socially isolated, they felt abandoned under pressure, the father wasn't involved there. And in my experience with Project Rachel and talking with many, many women, the parallels are almost exact to what she talked about in neonaticide.
Listeners, if you want to weigh in on the subject of what kind of criminal penalties, if any, should be there if abortion is made illegal again in this country, you can call the program 844-295-TALK, toll-free 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. And I have a number of emails from listeners who heard this morning that this is what we would be discussing. So let me go ahead and start by reading an email from a listener named Andrea. She writes, "Hi, Evan. I was raised to respect life in all forms, including the unborn. And yes, I said life. I will not vote for Donald Trump. I don't support him at all, but he was correct about this. Abortion is a form of murder. Women are not victims. They are human beings who make choices. If they choose to kill the unborn, then they have to deal with the consequences for that choice. Anyone who says otherwise would just be copping out, I'm sorry to say. Women are capable of understanding what life is. Why should we act like they are not?" Father Jim, what do you make of that?
Well, in my experience, and this is with a lot of women over 18 years, I have not found that true. The women that I, from people in their 20s, to there was one woman in her was 93 years old. It had the abortion 50 years ago. I see the same pattern in each of these women, that they felt alone. They felt abandoned. They felt tremendous pressure. They didn't feel the resources. It's interesting. There was a study done, one study, and it asked women that had abortion. They already had abortions. And they asked them, what would have taken for you not to have the abortion? 90% answered, if the father wanted the child. So the women that I've experienced in Project Rachel are people, one person described it as like a woman getting caught in a bear trap and gnaws her leg off to get out. It's that sense of pain. There's a, you might say, a social abortion that happens before the abortion actually takes place. And I believe most abortions are done for one reason or another, the child is not wanted. And my experience is the woman feels unwanted first and passes that along to the child through an abortion. And so pain that is not transformed is transmitted. And I see that over and over again.
But Father, is, in your eyes, is abortion murder?
Abortion is taking of a life. But why I was trying to use that parallel, so is neonaticide. It's taking of a newborn life. But people have struggled with how to deal with that. The penalties for that neonaticide have gone from first-degree murder to involuntary manslaughter, and it shows people's struggle to even deal with a child already born. In fact, in England, it was called the British Infanticide Act, and what it did is it allowed the services and help to help a person who's already gone through that. And 90% of the women, this is neonaticide, that were prosecuted, 90% got abortion, got probation, mm-hmm. and then they got counseling and other services were brought to them. Some received community service, but it wasn't one of punishment and the traditional thing. One last thing, the word penitentiary, which prisons come from, the original meaning was a penitent, one who changes their heart. So you have to look, when you answer this question, putting women in prison, in a prison system that's broken, that we incarcerate more people than any other place in the world, that we have so many people with drug and alcohol problems, people with disabilities. The prison system is overcrowded. We incarcerate more than any other country in the world. So you would have to rethink what you were going to do if there was any form of penalty, because putting more people into that, they only get worse in prison. That was my experience as a chaplain. The inmates I saw got worse, not better.
Rachel, what do you think?
So in response to Andrea's question, I think abortion in a lot of ways is a form of self-defense. But the interesting thing here is that it's more complicated, because the recipient of the violence, the preborn human, is not the aggressor. What is aggressing the woman is these daily acts of violence that are part of a system, part of the institutions in which we live in. So this is especially true for women who are poor, women who are people of color, women with disabilities, women within intimate partner relationships, for example. So like Father Jim has mentioned several times, women aren't seeking abortions because they want to. They're doing it because they don't feel like they have a better choice. And what we've been seeing recently is that we have this idea that women seeking abortions are maybe 20 years old, they're single, they're young, they don't feel equipped to have a child. And yes, that demographic is certainly vulnerable. But we're also seeing women who are older, who might be in relationships or out of them, who already maybe have two or three kids. And the majority are at 200% of the poverty line or below. And so the problem is that all of these things are forms of violence that are affecting the woman in her everyday life and affecting her children that have been born and who are existing. And the concern for her in this case, for example, is that by giving birth to this third or fourth child, the entire family is going to be at risk. So maybe they'll get kicked out into the streets. Maybe they'll have to, their diets will be affected. They won't have adequate health care. Maybe she'll lose her job. There's any number of things that can happen. So she's acting in a way that's defending herself and defending the other humans in her life by going out and seeking this form of violence. So in this way, it helps us understand what's going on. At the same time, we can't completely dehumanize the preborn human and just acknowledge that their life is worth taking for this reason. But it just means that somebody other than the woman, is sort of responsible for their death.
Well, I want to listen to a couple of sound clips, because this is what kind of sparked this discussion. You know, we are in the midst of a presidential campaign. It's possible that Donald Trump will be the next president, and he proclaims himself to be against abortion. But in that interview with Chris Matthews, it certainly sounded like he hadn't really considered what to do about the idea of, for those who think criminal penalties should be in play. So let's first listen to what he said in that context.
What crime is it?
Well, it's human life.
No, should the woman be punished for having an abortion?
Look.
This is not something you can dodge.
If abortion is a crime
or abortion is murder, you have to deal with it under the law. Should abortion be punished?
Well, people in certain parts of the Republican Party and conservative Republicans would say, yes, they should be punished.
How about you?
I would say that it's a very serious problem, and it's a problem that we have to decide on. It's very hard.
But you're forbidding
it. Are you going to say put them in jail? Is that
the punishment
you're talking about?
Well, no, but I'm asking you. as you say, you want to ban it. What's that mean?
I am pro-life, yes.
What is ban? How do you ban abortion? How do you actually do it?
Well, you know, you'll go back to a position like they had, where people will perhaps go to illegal places.
Yeah.
But you have to ban it.
Ban it and they go to somebody who flunked out of medical school.
Are you Catholic?
Yes, I think.
How do you feel about the Catholic Church's position?
I accept the teaching authority of my church on moral issues.
But do you know their position on abortion?
Yes, I do.
And do you concur with that position?
I concur with their moral position, but legally, I get to the question. Here's my problem.
No, but let me ask you, but what do you say about...
It's not funny.
Your church? Yeah, it's really not a funny thing. What do you say about your church? They're very, very strong.
They're allowed to, but the churches make their moral judgments, but you running for president of the United States will be chief executive of the United States. Do you believe in punishment for abortion? Yes or no, as a principle?
The answer is that there has to be some form of punishment.
For the woman?
Yeah, there has to be some form.
10 cents? 10 years?
I don't know.
You take positions and everything else.
I do take positions and everything else. It's a very complicated position.
But you say bluntly you're pro-life, meaning you want to ban it.
But the Catholic Church is pro-life.
No, let's not talk about my religion.
No, I am talking about your religion. Your religion. I mean, you say you're a very good Catholic.
I didn't say very good. I said I'm a Catholic. And secondly, I'm asking, you're running for president. I'm not. I'm asking you, what should a woman face if she chooses to have an abortion?
I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to play that game.
You said you're pro-life.
I am pro-life.
That means banning abortion.
And so is the Catholic Church pro-life.
But they don't control the... This isn't Spain. The church doesn't control the government.
What is the punishment under the Catholic Church? What is the punishment?
Let me give you something from the New Testament. Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's and to God the things that are God's. Don't ask me about my religion.
I'm asking you.
You want to be president of the United States.
Tell
me what the law should be. You said you're pro-life.
I am pro-life.
What's that mean?
With exceptions. I am pro-life. I have not determined what the punishment would be.
Why not?
All right, so that's Donald Trump talking to Chris Matthews on March 30th. And in case you think Donald Trump was winging his answer and hadn't really considered this question, the very next day his campaign put out a statement that reversed his position. Here's that statement, quote, "If Congress were to pass legislation making abortion illegal and the federal courts upheld this legislation, or any state were permitted to ban abortion under state and federal law, the doctor or any other person performing this illegal act upon a woman would be held legally responsible, not the woman. The woman is a victim in this case, as is the life in her womb. My position has not changed. Like Ronald Reagan, I am pro-life with exceptions." End quote. That's Donald Trump's statement the next day. But some of Trump's supporters say he was right the first time. Paychex founder Tom Golisano was a guest on my show in April. We talked about his support for Donald Trump, and Golisano said the media treats Trump unfairly. He pointed to coverage of Trump's abortion comments. Let's listen.
Remember the comment about punishing women that have abortions?
Yes.
Okay. Everybody made a big deal out of that. I saw the entire interview, and what he said to begin the interview was, if Congress and the president signed legislation to make abortion illegal, would you punish women
for
having...
Would you criminalize it? Should there be criminal penalties for the woman who has it?
Yeah. Yes. That's the answer. And of course, he said, yes, there should be. But he based his answer on the fact that it was illegal and Congress had made it illegal.
I still think there's some baloney there, Tom, because...
I don't think there is.
Because right now, the pro-life position, the so-called pro-life position from Ted Cruz and many others is, Congress should make it illegal, and the penalty should be for the provider, not the woman. The woman is one of the victims in that cycle.
I disagree. I think if it was illegal, I think the woman's just as guilty as the doctor.
All right, so that's Tom Golisano. He's not the only one who expressed that position, but let me ask our guest. I'll start in studio with Father Jim Hughes, who is a retired diocesan priest. Father Jim, Trump eventually switched and said, just the doctor, not the woman. Should a doctor who performs an abortion on a woman, if it is made illegal, should the doctor face criminal penalty?
Well, I think there's two different things. The doctor is not doing just one abortion as the woman is. He's doing maybe hundreds or thousands of them. He's doing it consciously.
But what if he just does one? Just one. Let's just talk about one.
If he did one, I believe there should be some type of penalty for that. But again, the approach should be, even with a doctor, the approach should be one of restorative justice. It's not about locking people up in that. The point is, how do we help people to come to the realization and come to the type of fullness of life that they can be? It's the purpose of that is to prevent that doctor from doing others, but it's also, he's important as well. Remember, Dr. Bernard Nathanson did over 50 a clinic that did over 50,000 abortions. He did 5,000 abortions himself. But what changed him is he saw the development of the child. He saw the reality of that. And that's part of the problem in our discussion now. I just want to hold this up. Our listeners can't see it. This is a famous picture of Alan Kundi, the little kid on the beach. And the headline is...
The three-year-old, yeah.
Yeah. If these extraordinary, powerful images of a dead Syrian child washed up on a beach don't change Europe's attitude to refugees, what will it be? It changed the issue. And the same thing, abortion, if you look at this, I'm showing you, Evan, this is a 19-week, which is illegal to take this life. Perfectly formed child. In fact, I baptized a child at 22 weeks that I could hold in my hand. So it's a balancing of these two realities of these lives. But even Bernard Nathanson changed and became a tremendous outspoken person for the unborn. And Abby Johnson, who I heard talk in Rochester, she was the Planned Parenthood Employee of the Year, ran a big abortion clinic in Texas, and she changed and now has become a great pro-life advocate. So that's what you always hope. You hope in every Saul there is a Paul waiting to come forth, even the doctor that does it.
The reason I asked Father Jim and Rachel Liepeller to come on this program is because in light of these comments during a presidential campaign, and in light of the fact that different states have different approaches to abortion, some rolling back at least some allowances in recent years, it's a valid question to at least ask, what should penalties be? And so, Father Jim, you're a restorative justice believer. You've seen that. You've worked in that. That's been a big part of your career. So before I turn to Rachel with the same question then, no penalties for the woman, the mother, or for a doctor who performs it, perhaps some kind of penalties, but you still prefer a restorative justice approach.
Yes. And even for the woman, it may not be penalties in our traditional sense, but what drove this person to that? There was a letter to the editor in the paper said a woman was unemployed, living with her parents at 22 years old and became pregnant. She had an abortion. And my question was, she was still unemployed, she was still living with her parents, and she was still 22 years old. The abortion did nothing to change that life. And I think that's the problem. We have to look at the causes. I just want one quick paragraph. This is, again, about neonaticide, infanticide. This is what the person says. And I think it's the same reality as anything we could say on the abortion issue. This is what they write. We must begin to identify the myriad ways which our society tolerates and perpetuates infanticide. And we must take on the work of creating safety nets that are strong enough to catch the mothers who are driven to the edge of despair, permitting us to save both them and their precious children. That's neonaticide, infanticide. I would say that same thing applies in this issue. We have to look at what, in my experiences, there weren't the services, the support, the women I saw in Project Rachel. They were facing this alone. And again, the partner either abandoned them or said, well, it's your body, your decision, which she interpreted as, you don't care, you don't want it. So I think we have to look at what drives women, the pressures. We have to get at that. But that the law, remember, also has a teaching value. So that is important as well.
Okay, Rachel, functionally going forward, if abortion is illegal again, penalties for the doctor, criminal penalties?
Yeah, my response would be very similar to what Father Hughes has suggested. In the interviews that we just listened to, there was an obsession almost with the word punishment. The word punishment has been thrown out back and forth in talking about penalties over and over again. And we're not seeking punishment, right? We're seeking justice. So we need to address the roots of what's going on. And so the difference between making something illegal versus making it criminalized, there's a very clear example of that in terms of sex work. So the majority of people in sex work are either trafficked or they're making the choice of those who have no choice. So they're victims of gender discrimination, poverty, sexual and verbal abuse, lack of jobs that pay a living wage, et cetera. So by making sex work illegal, it acknowledges that most of the people doing sex work are victims of broader systemic problems. And at the same time, it's criminalized for people who are buyers or people who are selling. So in this just follows a really similar standard to what Father Jim and I would say most of the pro-life movement is suggesting. So women are in these cases are victims if they're seeking abortion at this time, because they're victims of broader problems. But at the same time, the person who's performing an abortion is doing so in a way that's premeditated. It's purposeful. They're getting funding from this decision. They're often promoting it. There's more things going on here.
Let's get our only break of the hour in, and we're going to come back to your phone calls and emails. I have a number of other emails that have come in from different angles on this. We're talking about what happens if abortion is made illegal, and from the perspective of people who oppose abortion, in general, why does the movement not also support criminal penalties for, typically, the talk is about the mom, about the woman in this case. And you're hearing from Father Jim Hughes, a retired diocesan priest, and Rachel Lee Peller, representing a group called Feminists for Nonviolent Choices. You can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We'll get to your feedback after this short break. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, perhaps the most controversial piece of weaponry in this country is the AR-15. You have members of Congress calling for bans, and a piece has gone viral written by a man named John Stokes defending the AR-15, saying it's misunderstood and that gun owners need the right to own it. He's on the show on Tuesday explaining his position and answering your questions on the AR-15. And welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's go to Don in East Rochester. Go ahead, Don.
If Roe versus Wade is overturned, it will not prevent abortion from happening. Abortion did not begin in 1973 with Roe versus Wade. Women have been having abortions since the beginning of time, and women will continue to have abortions until the end of time. The only question is will it be safe and will it be legal? We should not be talking about leveling charges against a woman or the provider. We shouldn't be leveling charges at all. Women have been having abortions since the beginning of time and will have them till the end of time. And it's interesting that the Roman Catholic Church only came out against abortion in the mid-19th century. Why wait until the mid-19th century in a history of a church that's 2,000 years old? The fact is, will we have abortion? Will it be safe and legal instead of illegal and unsafe? Thank you. Good afternoon.
All right, Don, thank you. And before I get our guest to respond to that, let me go ahead and read an email that is similar but has a little more detail. This is from a listener withholding her name. Quote, I was in college when abortion became legal in New York. I remember the days when young women paid dearly with money, sexual favors, and sometimes with their lives for illegal abortions. My mother was a nursing student at Strong in the late 1940s. They had a maternity unit, and across the hall, there was the, quote, septic unit, where women were treated for miscarriages, often self-induced or illegal abortions. Routine hospital care, but women routinely died. Both wards were very busy, and most of the nursing students learned more than they ever wanted to know about illegal abortion. Ask any woman over the age of 60 whether she has any friends who were injured, sterilized, or died as the result of a back alley abortion. I'm sure your guests will be full of shoulds. We should use birth control. She should wait. She should give the baby up for adoption. But maybe your guests could work toward better sex education, more acceptance of normal sexuality, better role models for young men before they drive women back to the back alleys. So that dovetails with what Don said. I'll start with Father Hughes. Go ahead, Father. What do you think?
Well, a number of things. First of all, there are theories that a lot of the back alley abortions were done by doctors. Maybe one person, a very well-known person in the pro-choice movement, said maybe 90%. There wasn't the deaths that, if you can look statistically before Roe v. Wade and that, there weren't the maternal deaths. And back in 1977, the U.S. government paid for 295,000 Medicaid abortions. The Hyde Amendment came in and dropped it down to 2,000. This is what it says. No increase in abortion deaths related to legal or illegal abortions occurred after the Hyde Amendment, according to a U.S. government survey. That's number one. Number two, back in 1980, there were 30,000 fatalities by DWI. Mothers Against Drunk Driving got involved in that because they see a teaching, a protection of the law, and in fact, even increased the penalties. They went from 30,000 fatalities a year to 16,000 now. It's a 47% decrease. Are there still DWI fatalities? Yes, but a tremendous decrease. They have saved over 350,000 lives by what they did, not just the law, but educating around it. We tend to think that it's just the law. You would have to do a whole educational thing as well as have the resources. So if a person, a woman, is going to choose life, you have those resources there that she very often doesn't have.
Rachel, what do you think?
Sure. There's a lot of things to respond on here. I think one thing that I want to say something about is that the caller talked about the Catholic Church. And I think it's important to acknowledge that not all people in the pro-life movement are Catholic and not all people in the pro-life movement are Christian. So personally, I'm atheist. There are also people who are Muslim and Jewish and pagan and just anything across that spectrum. So that opens a lot of space here. This isn't a religious issue necessarily. It's an issue of human rights. And so I don't know the history of why the Catholic Church made their position, but I would guess that a lot of it had to do with science and technology. So this is something that is definitely, we're seeing a lot today. So the millennial generation, so people between around 18 and 29, are more pro-life than their parents. This isn't because people are more conservative, because we're seeing that they're more in support of things like same-sex marriage, and like the emailer had mentioned, issues like sex ed and sexuality, you know, embracing a lot of these movements, including the Black Lives Matter movement and supporting open avenues for immigration. It's not because people are conservative, but because people of my generation grew up with ultrasounds. So I saw pictures of my brother in the womb, and that was a very real human image that we're growing up with. So this issue does not have to do with religion, but it has to do with science and technology and our understanding of humanity. So that's an important thing. So I do agree with the emailer in saying that we need to address things like sex ed and sexuality in addition to having access to birth control. I think at the same time, we need to acknowledge that abortion is not the only issue of reproductive injustice. So what we're also seeing is that women of color, especially in prisons, their reproductive rights are being taken away. So maybe they're being sterilized without their consent. Women in Puerto Rico were recently tested for different kinds of birth control without having adequate consent or knowledge about what was going on. Women in prison are being shackled while they're giving birth. So there's other issues that are happening at once, and none of these really address the roots of the problem. So we can't just keep penalizing problems. We can't just keep focusing on abortion, but we need to look at all of these issues as intersections of one another and how they interact.
Is there dissonance, Rachel, between wanting to make abortion illegal but opposing birth control and comprehensive sex ed?
No. Say your question again.
is it hypocritical to say I think abortion should be illegal and I also oppose birth control and I oppose comprehensive sex ed? In other words, do you find some dissonance between those positions, that you know, people who say, well, I'm pro-life, but I'm also, you know, I'm also pro-abstinence. I don't want to see comprehensive sex ed, et cetera.
I don't think there's necessarily a dissonance there. I don't think it's hypocritical, but to me, it doesn't address the roots of what's going on. It's not a comprehensive approach. But there's different ways of looking at every issue. So we see that a lot in differences between socialists and libertarians, right? So they might see the same problem and have different ways of approaching it. And I think it's important to look at that. From where I'm standing and from the knowledge that I've gathered from information that I've looked at, sex ed is important to reducing the abortion rate overall. But the important thing is that when we're talking about sex ed, it can't just talk about how to have sex and what that looks like, but really understanding all of sex. So that includes fetal development, right? And what people need to be having those conversations when they're going into consensual relationships of not just the immediate act before them, but the longer term effects. So that could be talking about emotions. It might be talking about STIs. It might be having that conversation of what happens if we do get pregnant and what are we both open to right now. So that all has to be part of the sexual education program. And I think that those components are something that sex ed is often missing.
Father, do you find any hypocrisy between those who oppose abortion but also oppose contraception, comprehensive sex ed, et cetera?
Well, the thing is, I'm not saying you're trying to, but this is a trap question I see, because they're two separate issues. And not that one doesn't relate to the other, But contraception, except if it's abortifacient, is about preventing conception. Once conception happens, you're talking about a life. Yeah. So it's two different issues. I don't think you could get a consensus in our country whatsoever against contraception. But I think you could build a consensus towards abortion because of what Rachel just talked about, the development of the child. I mean, people that see the unborn child, we've gone from 2D to 3D, we're up to 4D ultrasound, that see that, they're moved by it. And in fact, that's what changed Abby Johnson. She was helping in the clinic. They were short staffed the day, so they asked, the doctor asked her to look at the monitor, and she had never seen it before. She saw the monitor and she saw this instrument going after this unborn child, and she was horrified. So a lot of people, even that work in clinics, a lot of women don't even realize, they think that it's a surgical contraception, what abortion is. But we have to keep those two issues very, very separate, because one, you're not, there's a lot of different opinions, but on terms of what life is, I think there could be a consensus built, as Rachel said, from science.
Let me read an email before I get back to your phone calls from a listener named Sarah. Evan, I had an abortion when I was 25. I've heard some anti-abortion leaders say that choosing abortion is always, quote, desperate and sad. I will tell you that I was not desperate or sad. I made a choice based on my consideration of a wide range of issues. Okay? Is that okay with everyone? Is it okay that I wasn't sad about it? Is it okay that I was thoughtful and that it was the right decision for a number of reasons? I'm not saying I felt great about it. I'm just saying that we seem to pretend that it's always this heart-wrenching, life-altering choice. It's not. I'm evidence of that. I am not a victim. I am a woman. That's from Sarah. Rachel, what do you make of that?
I think that's really tough. So I do a lot of work in the domestic violence field, and we tend to call people survivors rather than victims, because it's a matter of getting through something. And I personally feel that as all women in this world, we're victims of institutional violence. And so that's what we're talking about here. So this means everything from being worried about catcalling in the streets to making less money, to having to deal with the possibility of rape on a daily basis. And also being responsible for childcare, for care of our parents. So these are all things that affect our daily lives. And so some people might frame, I would frame this as a violence. She might frame it in a different way. So she mentioned all these different little things that led to her decision. But I think the point here is that she wasn't trying to get pregnant in order to have an abortion. So this was never something that she wanted to happen. She might have done so feeling pretty good about that decision, and I think that it is important to honor that and not assume that everyone's experience is going to be the same. But at the end of the day, what we're still seeing is that people who have abortions, because they are women or because they are people who have uteruses and female reproductive parts, are victims of systemic violence, and so that's the way that we're using that term, or that I am, I guess. And justice still needs to happen in some way. So she, it sounds like she wasn't humanizing the unborn child in this situation, which is a systemic problem that we've been dealing with. And we dehumanize children as well. We dehumanize women. We dehumanize people in prison. We dehumanize immigrants. We dehumanize people of color. And we've seen that a lot recently in terms of the police shootings that have been that happened this week and that have been happening for decades, since as far as anyone knows. So these issues are all intertwined. It's so institutional and so intersectional. Any of us can separate ourselves from these broader problems.
And Rachel, I can't speak for Sarah, and I certainly appreciate her sharing a story via email. So I don't know what she would say about whether she felt like she was humanizing or not an unborn child that she chose to terminate. But it sounds like from her email, she's bothered by this idea that she must be a victim. I mean, I've heard women say that, you know, feminism is about being strong, about agency, about understanding choices, about controlling your body. And that she sounds from her email like she's bothered by this idea that if you had an abortion, well, you are a victim, that you can't, you know, that she feels like, no, I wasn't a victim. I was strong. I'm okay. I made a choice. And don't, you know, turn me into a victim when, you know, she feels strong about that. You know, what do you make of that?
Right. I think that is a really tough place to be in. But what we're seeing here is that sometimes, even though we're able to make a choice, it's not a choice that we're making freely. And we might be doing the best that we can with the resources that we have. And if she doesn't want to take on the label of a victim, I think that's completely understandable. I don't think people want to be victims. I don't think people want to take on that label or feel like they need help, right? People just need access to justice. We need access to resources. We need information. It is a very complicated picture that we're seeing here. I think abortion is such a different conversation and such a different issue than anything else in some ways, because we do have that back and forth struggle of human rights and dealing with bodily autonomy of the woman and the bodily autonomy of the unborn human. You sound like you want to...
Look, I know your time is short because Rachel has got to just get out of here a little early this hour because of work obligations. Father Jim, did you want to weigh in on the email? Or
yeah.
Go ahead.
I would agree that not every woman is going to feel like a victim or devastated or that. But my experience is, it's not, she said she's 25. I mean,
She said she had an abortion when she was 25. I don't know how old she is.
Yeah, but I've seen women, I know one woman that I saw had an abortion in college. It was 10 years later when her sister had a child. They had tried for 10 years to have a child and couldn't. And when her sister had a child, it brought everything up to the surface. So it's the first time that she could be a parent, or it's the first time she's a grandparent, or there's myriads of things that can happen. A number of the abortion studies only go out a year, 2-3 years. It could be many years later that all of a sudden that hits her, what happened. It could be seeing a program where there's a development of the preborn child is shown on the History Channel or whatever, and all of a sudden it can begin to hit her. So I'm not saying every woman that it will happen. My experience, every woman I've saw has, but it doesn't mean every woman has. But it could happen many years later when something happens, it strikes her.
Rachel Lee Piller is with Feminists for Nonviolent Choices, and I know your time is short, so before I get to phone calls, because Father Jim's with us for the rest of the hour here, just some final thoughts from you, Rachel. Go ahead. Are you there, Rachel? Now I'm hearing a phone ringing. So I think I've lost Rachel. Well, I know she's got a role anyway here, and we certainly appreciate her time. Let me go ahead and do this. Let me grab Jan and Webster, who wanted to respond to some of what she just heard. And again, if you're just joining us, we're talking about the future of abortion if it is made illegal in this country again, as in, will women still have it? Should there be criminal penalties? And we're talking to panelists who are explaining why, I think, generally speaking, people who oppose abortion also oppose criminalizing it for women who have it. And Father Jim Hughes is here. He is a retired diocesan priest. Let me grab Jan and Webster next. Go ahead, Jan.
This is one of the most successful conversations I've heard about abortion ever. So I applaud you, Evan, for hosting a very difficult and controversial topic and the presentation of your guests. However,
well, thanks. Go ahead.
That aside.
Yes, go ahead.
I wanted to say that, you see, the email that you got does, in fact, link that birth control and abortion issue and the humanity of women and the dehumanization of women. Because one of the concepts, it seems to me, that's frequently presented is that you can have sex without getting pregnant. Easy. Just take this pill. We don't give our young male athletes hormones, but we give them to women. Women can buy them over the counter. And when women, I say from 14, I guess any age, up in California, they just passed legislation to buy birth control pills and morning after pills over the counter. That's a tremendous, think of that little hormone load on any person's system. Then a pregnancy occurs. And then I think Jim and Rachel talked about all those other things. But because if you ask me, the moment a woman's told, we can have sex, but you can't get pregnant, you're in an exploitive situation.
Okay. Well, why don't you stay there, Jen? And Father Jim, what do you think?
Oh, I agree. That's why, I mean, one of the difficulties, I want to keep the issues separate, as I said, but the thing is, if there is such an emphasis on, as Jan had said, not getting pregnant, what happens when the person does? I mean, then you have what most abortions come around to is the child is unwanted. There's not the openness to life in that situation. In fact, one study that was done 70% of couples that were not married that had an abortion, the woman had an abortion, 70% of the couples were broken up within a year, 90% within 5 years. So the relationship can't hold that because the relationship is already fragile. You add on possibly guilt and depression, all the things that might come from that, so it doesn't succeed. So I think we sometimes are too simplistic about looking at some of these issues. There's more down under that we have to look at. And I would say that openness to life, which our church has taught, which I think is an amazing concept, to be open to life is really the keystone of what will happen or not.
What do you think, Jen?
I think that may be quite true, because in the end, if the relationship is we can have sex but you can't get pregnant, it is going to fall on the woman whether she aborts that developing embryo, fetus, baby, or whether she takes that morning after pill and puts a big healthy dose of carcinogenic hormones into her body to have possibly the abortion of a very early pregnancy. Or you take these pills on a monthly basis, and it also affects all of us in so many, many, many ways, not the least of which is in the water and in the environment. We have hormones all over the place. What are their effects? No one answers that question.
Well, Jan, thank you for the call and for some of your thoughts about the program here. And Father Jim, I think Jan is bringing up the fact that we have this inequity in relationships sometimes. Well, certainly we know women carry children and men don't. But, maybe feminism is also about supporting equality of all forms. And I think Rachel Lee Peller talked about that earlier this hour, really supporting real equality.
Well, and one of the interesting things, I do see men through this process, but the ratio is probably 20-1. Mm-hmm. And part of that is Roe v. Wade, remember, took men out of the situation. They have nothing to do with the decision, though my understanding, I think if later on the woman carries the child to birth, they can be taken to support the child. But what I've seen is that men, we leave them out of this decision. And like that earlier thing I said, 90% of the women in this one study said, if the father had wanted the child, they would have went through. And that's what I see. They were abandoned, or if not physically, at least emotionally, by their partner when it came to this, what happened is after conception happens.
All right, Ann in Caledonia next up. Go ahead, Ann.
Hi. I love your show, Evan. And I just needed to call in. I wanted to say that I grew up Catholic, and I myself would never have an abortion. I never have. But I can't see you having a Catholic priest on as, one of your experts to talk about this. For the fact alone that he said that contraception and pregnancy, abortion, have to be two separate issues, I think that is ridiculous. It's like not only listening to a man talk about a woman's body, but a Catholic priest who, the Catholics, they don't want you to have contraception. You're not supposed to use contraception. So I'm just surprised, and I'm sad to hear that that's your guest today.
Well, and thank you for the phone call. And I understand the complaint, but I also will say, Jim was a panelist. Rachel, of course, was on the program as well. And he is, someone who has worked on these issues for a number of years, but he's also not, Father Jim is not not a stereotype, but some people stereotype the pro-life movement. And Father Jim has worked in restorative justice. He has counseled, and the question was not just about abortion per se. The question was about why not criminal penalties if you believe it's murder. And I think someone like Father Jim is very well positioned to articulate why they have that position.
Yeah, and I would say I'm not holding myself up or anything, but I would say the average person hasn't seen the number of women and men I have seen that have had abortions. They might know one or two or three, but I've seen too many, a ton of them. And what I'm seeing is the same thing happen. But the healing is the most powerful thing that I've had in my priesthood, to watch God's grace with these women that have been wounded and broken and watch the peace and the forgiveness and the healing has just been unbelievable. And that could be done by a priest or not a priest or that, but it's been a wonderful privilege for me to be able to see this healing process. The other thing, remember, you know, we keep talking about women's issue in that. Remember, 50% of the females within the womb that are aborted are female. You know, when you talk about, when people say, I'm for women's issue, I would say yes, for all women, all females, within the womb as outside the womb, not just when they get born, but females. And in places like China and India, who is the ones that are a high percentage aborted are female unborn children because they're not valued.
And to go back to Anne's point about separating the issues of contraception, abstinence only education, those kind of things, we know from the evidence, the highest rates of unwanted teen pregnancy are in states that really push abstinence only education. And the lowest rates of unwanted teen pregnancy are in states that have comprehensive sex education. So Anne's saying that's why she thinks they're linked. I understood Father Jim's point, but I also understand why Anne disagrees. So when we come back to abortion more broadly speaking, we will have panelists who, you know, sort of support it, those who don't. In this case, the question was, why do so many people who oppose abortion also oppose criminal penalties for women who have them? Father Jim, I want to thank you for being here because I think you at least articulated that. You know, so the point was not to maybe convince every audience member to agree with you, though I'm sure that you would appreciate that. But it's at least understanding this question that Donald Trump and people like Tom Golisano have raised for us, which is, should there be criminal penalties and why not? Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And it's been nice seeing you in studio, Father Jim Hughes. Also, our thanks to Rachel Lee Peller, who is with Feminists for Nonviolent Choices. And for all of the feedback we've gotten, some of you sharing very personal stories this hour. We appreciate that as always. Thanks to the entire crew. I'm Evan Dawson, and we will talk with you Tuesday on Member Supported Public Radio.